Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Brian. And we're back with another episode of the Stream Close-Up Podcast. And you know what that means? That means we've been renewed for a second season. Yeah! And that's all thanks to you guys who tuned in during season one. We really appreciate everyone who's been following the show. We had a great time doing it, and because you guys are enjoying it, we're going to keep doing it. And we're going to try to up our game this season. We're going to try to come at you every Thursday with a new episode. So a little more frequency to what we're doing here. But please do keep in mind that everyone responsible for bringing you this show does have a day job. So give us a little slack if we miss one. But we'll do our best over the next 10 weeks or so to come at you with something fresh every Thursday. God, it's good to be back. Let's do the thing. Our guest this week is producer Suzanne Bielberg-Riedholm. She's had a hand in or been responsible for an amazing number of high-quality film and TV productions, not to mention an iconic TV ad that we'll talk about. She's worked as a producer on TV series like Det Brenner, Papa Police, and Lasermannen, among others. Her latest project, Vår Tid Är Nu, or The Restaurant as it's called in English, was just awarded a well-deserved Swedish Emmy as the TV Drama of the Year. Among other films, Suzanne produced the Dragon Tattoo trilogy based on the Stieg Larsson novels. Those were later remade by Hollywood. We'll talk about all of this and learn about Suzanne's interesting journey from New Zealand Jillaroo to award-winning producer and all-around cool lady. In for her Stream Close-Up, Suzanne Bielberg-Riedholm. Hit it, Jose! Welcome to the studio, Suzanne Bielberg-Riedholm.
Thank you.
Nice to join. Thanks for joining us. We're really happy to have you here. Many of you might not be familiar with Suzanne by name, but you've almost certainly seen some of her work. Suzanne is a producer who's worked on some of the biggest franchises in Swedish film history, I would have to say. The Stieg Larsson collection, among other things. She's here to tell us a little bit about her journey, what it means to be a producer, how she became, went from a line producer to a producer of these massive hits, and how she traveled around the world, and that influenced who she is now. Welcome to the studio, Suzanne.
Thank you.
Can you start with you hinted that you've been around the world.
Yeah, this is ages ago. This is back in the 80s, late 80s. But I did this trip for like 2 years around the world. I didn't leave Sweden with a lot of money, so I had to stop and work on all places. Mm. And one of the places that I stayed the longest time at was in New Zealand. Before that, I went to Australia and I worked there as a Jillaroo. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Something to do with kangaroos?
Cowgirl.
Cowgirl. Cowgirl. Okay. Jillaroo.
Jillaroo is the female, Jackaroo is the male, okay. And Stockman is the boss of it. So anyway, I became really friendly there with all the guys working there. And these Aboriginal guys, they said that you have to come to this island and travel with us. And, you know, they were like my brothers. We were like brothers and sisters. So anyway, to make a long story short, on this trip around the world, I met these fantastic people, among the others, the stockmen or the jackaroos in Australia. And on my way back home, I just thought, you know, I have to go back and make documentaries. So I wanted to get into the film business.
I was going to ask, are you thinking about their stories already? Are you taking any pictures? Or
I took a lot of pictures. So I really wanted to go back to all these different places. And I should have, but I haven't yet. But so when I got home, I looked through all these production companies. I called the SF and they said, it's really hard to get into this business. You would be a lucky girl if you get in and blah, blah, blah. You need to have a connection somehow. And I didn't have any connections at all. But I just, you know, took a copy of the phone book of all the production companies and just, you know, sent letters at that time. Called them and followed up. And but eventually I got a hit or whatever you call it. I got a connection with Penguin Films.
Penguin.
And this is late 89. This is 90s, the 90s, I think, early 90s. And they were looking for someone who could help them as a production assistant.
But before we go further.
Commercials.
Before you took the trip, did you have this idea in mind that you wanted to be a storyteller, or did that spark your desire to do this?
That sparked.
Okay, and you thought first, oh, I see a documentary here that I want to make.
Yeah. After meeting all these people, since I traveled on my own, I always met people. I mean, I didn't have anyone else to talk to, so I had to talk to the locals. And that's what I really aimed for on my trip, to not to be a backpacker and just go on different backpackers' places. I tried to stay with locals and small and work my way around just to meet the locals, because that's the point. Otherwise, you know, you just meet other.
Not be a tourist, but dig in a little bit.
Yeah.
Get the experience.
Yeah. No offense to people that are backpacking. That's good too. But for me, it was much better to sort of meet the people that lived in the place or in the country.
Can I ask? I guess you're just out of school at this point?
Hang on now. No, I worked in the hotel business for a while.
In the hotel business? And what's your background? What did you study when you were at school?
I didn't study for very long.
Okay, fair enough.
I have worked my way up, learning by doing. I went to the 9th grade, which you do in compulsory in Sweden. Then I took the shortest gymnasium as you can ever take, which is tvåårig sociallinje. At that gymnasium, you will find people that are really lazy, or you will find people that wants to study to a doctor really quickly, because they can take those 2 years, that can, then you can just add the math and the physics. So it was like, and here I was in the middle of the lazy one and the doctors people, and I was a sport nerd at that time. I was just playing soccer and handball and skiing.
And I guess no one was teaching any film classes in that gymnasium either.
So I was in the middle there, a bit lost. But I did those 2 years, then I just started to work at the hotel business, which I worked with for like 7 years. I started that when I was quite young. I traveled to Scotland from when I was 13 years old during summer times, just for a few weeks or so every summer to start to learn English. So I used to speak with a broad Scottish accent.
Thank God you've gotten rid of that.
It's gone now. No, yeah, I got totally wiped out when I went to the States. I was so sad. I had this really nice Scottish accent, but it's gone.
Spend some time there. It'll come back, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So the people at Penguin recognize you as someone who's got some drive or some talent.
Yeah, they said after a while, they said, well, this... I had this paper from the cowboy station in Australia where it said that I was, you know, mustering cows and castrating bulls and rounding up cows. And they said that was the thing that they sort of, you know, put their eye on and said, we have to meet this crazy girl.
What, were they having trouble with their talent?
I don't know. There was just that. They said, we needed a strong one. And actually, they were looking for the guy, they said, but then said, oh, here's a girl. She seems to be strong and not being scared of getting dirt under her fingernails, as a saying in Swedish. I don't know if you say it in English,
sure,
too.
Sure.
Yeah. So they called me in for an interview and, you know, we just clicked. And then I was there with them from 90 to... 96, I think, yeah.
Working on what kind of projects? What were you doing for them?
I just started off carrying stuff, fixing stuff, being an assistant on set and being assistant at the office. And
when you say on set, are you talking about TV productions, film productions,
this
commercials,
commercial.
Music videos? Okay.
And in the 90s, we did. There were so many commercials. They just started up, you know, with MTG here and also TV4.
The whole commercial spectrum.
Yeah, it exploded then. So, I mean, it was, you know, at that point, I don't know if you're allowed to say it here, but you got about 3 million Swedish crowns for a 30-second commercial. It was crazy, all this money that we had, you know. It's really hysterical. Anyway, it was a good planned school.
It's generated some amazing talent. I think that phenomenon has created some great directors who've gone on to do great things, starting with the commercial work.
We had DOPs as well.
It's a real, I don't know what to say here, a real...
It's a planned school.
It's a planned school, but it's also sort of a moment that came together to sort of create this synergy. And I see a parallel to what's happening now with all the streaming services that have popped up that sort of create all this opportunity for people to go who are creative with their output, that, you know, more windows that we didn't have before.
Yeah.
So you're working at Penguin, you're doing everything that's required of you, and you're learning as you go, I imagine.
Yeah. And I quite quickly went, what I did was I actually wanted to be a photographer, DOP, or that's why I wanted to go back and do those documentaries for. So that's what I aim for. So at the same time, I studied at Stockholm's film school. But after a year, I had so much work at Penguin Films, so there was no chance that I could finish off school, which was sad for a while, but I had my job and it was just straight up. I went from an assistant to a production manager quite quickly. We really clicked on Penguin Films.
It feels like it was the right school for you at the end of the day.
It was.
So would you be able to name anything that people would remember from your time at Penguin that you worked on? Any campaigns or?
Yeah, there was one. I think nearly everyone or people in that watch commercials at that time could remember. It's one with Povel Ramel, and it's called Two Holes in the Wall.
Two Holy Wagon.
Yeah. Huh?
Okay. That was a huge campaign.
Yeah, and it was kind of one of the longest commercials at that time. So 1 minute. It was very long anyway. I can't remember now. I'm really proud of that commercial. No, I'm not so proud of all the commercials, but that one I am. It's.
You have to, you have to get your 10,000 hours somewhere.
Yeah. And it was fun to work with Povel Ramel too. You know, we went home to his place, and it was like, you know, you were really sort of moved by meeting him.
Swedish cultural icon.
Yeah, for sure. Fantastic.
Two holes in the wall.
Yeah.
Anything else that people might remember?
For commercials, maybe. I just forgot. I remember that one.
Okay. Du kan suga som en galning efter smuts i ditt palats. Utan hål i apparaten byter smutsen bara plats. Du kan tjata, vädja, men du tonar knappast fram som den slugare bland frugare av sugare av damm. Så säg mig, var är hålen vänner? Ser ni hålen vänner? Undran och skräck jag känner, var? Jag frågar, var är hålen broder? Visa hålen syster, kärnan ska vara i skalet. Är det galet? Halleluja. Du är nitisk i ditt yrke, har en ambition av stål, men din framgång kräver tillgång till en särskild typ av hål. Människan blir trots ett par ögon, sen är öron och ett svalg, med det lysande bestulen på sin lysande detalj. Så säg mig, var är hålen vänner? Ser ni hålen vänner? Undran och skräck jag känner, var? Mig undras, var är hålen bröder? Pass på hålen systrar, mycket må vara möjligt. Helelöjligt, utan hål. El är inte bra, utan hål. Ingenting att ha, utan hål. Bara fel, utan hål. Ingen el, utan hål. Var de sex, nej, var de tolv, nej, nej, 103, nej, två tysta snälla hål. Satt de glest, fog de runt, nej, var de strunt, nej, två viktiga små hål. Så säg mig, var är hålen vänner? Ser ni hålen vänner? Var är hålen? Gå ut och
glaset. Ja, ja, de har den röde. Finnen har den sista snoken och leten tar det.
So Penguin, then, you put in your time. You've done your whatever 1,000 hours there.
Yeah.
Do you move from there to Jaworski right away?
No, I was kind of a freelancer for a little while. And then I...
Can I ask, what is that experience like? How much time is spent chasing work versus doing work? I think This is also an interesting question for actors as well.
Yeah. Well, I didn't chase so much work. I was lucky. I got called up. The problem with me was that I couldn't say no. I was scared to say no because then you might not get more jobs. So I was saying yes all the time. So I was actually working too much at that time, and also building a family at the same time. It was it was a little bit too much. So
you're being called in as a line producer on projects, or
I was at that time. I was working as a producer for commercials. Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit about what the distinction is between a line producer and a producer?
I don't think there is any line producer in the commercials.
Mm, okay.
There would be producers and production managers. It's too small project.
From a film perspective.
From what I'm working now, I can say from the one I work, because that's a big one. It's not always that you have a line producer. You can combine with different, you know, you can be a, it depends how, what kind of producer you are. The way I work, since I work my way up, I know the whole, you know, different, I could easily work only with a production manager if the project is not too big, if it's like a movie. But like a big project like that I'm working on now.
Name it so people know what we're talking.
Vår tid är nu.
And it is a big project. Killer ratings, getting 1.5 million people every Monday night on SVT. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, on that one, that's such a big project. So on that one, which is, you know, we were making 2 seasons back to back. So that is 20 episodes. So what I'm working with now is that I have a line producer and a production manager for each block. So we like a season, we put them in blocks. So we can divide them differently. But the first one was divided 4-4-2. Yeah. So each production manager take their own block. And I also work together with a post-production producer. You need a sort of a bigger team when you make so many episodes at the same time. And the difference, it's hard to say. It actually depends what kind of producer you are. If you are a producer there are producers that come from the way I come from, that sort of grows up in the business. And there are producers that come from the side that, you know, doing script or whatever, you can... sprungen ur. Du kan vara sprungen i olika världar. You can
run in different lanes, yeah.
Yeah. And those one maybe cannot calculate or do the counting and or sort of
the budget side.
Yeah, budget or even vad heter det? Plan the whole production.
Project management.
Yeah,
part.
Project manager. They for sure need a line producer or a production manager. So it's hard to say what are a producer, what are a line producer, because they are from different worlds from the beginning. So
and how they relate to each other and the needs of the specific project.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. So it's hard to say. But if I would go, in my opinion, a producer should be able to calculate and budget and you know, have the oversight. So the person can have control. Then he can, depending on how big the project is, you will have a line producer together with you and a production manager. But if you are working on like a feature film, it would be good enough to have a producer and a production manager, but it's all different. And also budget wise, I mean, you want the money to go as much as possible to what you see in the television.
Exactly.
So you shouldn't
see
overload
the money on the screen.
Yeah,
you say,
so you don't want to overload with production people either. You just need to have the ones so you can keep it all together in
keep
a good way.
Keep it moving.
Yeah.
Keep it moving. I want to come back to Vartita New, do this a little bit chronologically, because there's a lot I'd like to unwrap there. Mm-hmm. If we roll back then a little bit earlier in your career, mm-hmm. when you took your first production credits for, was it the Laura Trenter books,
yeah.
the projects?
Yeah.
Were you an independent producer at that time, or were you?
I was with Jarovsky. So I was very shortly a freelancer. I was going to say that. I was very shortly working as a freelancer. And I had my eyes on Jarovsky because they had a really good rumor of being this happy production company with Rolf Sohlman. He was the boss at that time. He was the, he started the production company. So he had they had this rumor or this happy aura around them that they were the happy production companies. And
what were they producing before you joined them that made you interested?
They were producing commercials. Okay. So that's my sort of line in there. So that's how I had to start working, doing commercials, even if I did have my aim to do drama series. But that was pretty quickly that I had that in my head. But I sort of, you know, just keep on working and see what happens. So I aimed for Jarovsky because they did commercials and drama series. And they also did TV, as we say, which is, you know, TV shows or whatever. So they had a kind of broad spectra of what they produced. So I aimed to work with them. And I came to them 96, 97. And did commercials with them until 2000, so quite a few years.
And then started working on features.
Yeah, because they were building up and they had Marianne Gray then that came from the States. She had worked with PR there on different features, and she didn't know how to produce, but we sort of teamed up. So she found the books. Laura Trenter books, and then we teamed up and we produced it together.
Can we talk a little bit in detail how that actually happens, though? So you find the books, she's reading the books, she says, these are great stories, these are worth producing.
Mm-hmm.
So then you go and reach out and you buy an option for those stories?
Yeah, that's what you do. You buy an option for the stories and you start to develop.
And that's the risk that the production company is taking at this point. No one is committed to buying these. You're just going to put this production together and start to sell it at some point.
Yeah.
So when do you go from optioning the books to start to talk to potential buyers for the films?
Pretty quickly,
yeah.
You do, because you have a sort of short time there. You don't want to buy another option. You want to, if you bought an option for like a year or 6 months or whatever, you want to nail it as soon as possible. So as soon as you got the option, you start working with it and developing it. And maybe you contact a script writer to sort of write a short synopsis. Mm-hmm. And then you go and pitch it to a TV station.
And when you're pitching it to the TV stations, then you're looking for their financial contribution to get the project done.
Yeah.
So you have the commitment.
At that time, we went right to SVT and they paid for the whole thing.
And how does that work? I mean, I know there's, for example, I think it's going on right now, the Cannes Film Festival. Everyone is showing their wares. Yeah. Is there something similar in Scandinavia, or do you just knock on doors and say?
Knock on doors is really the best, I think. I mean, there is, of course, Cannes is going on right now, as you said. And I know we're down there with my boss, Irene Lindblad, who's been in this house before. She's down there selling new projects and also Vårtida Nu, or the restaurant, mm-hmm. as it's called, worldwide.
The restaurant, that's going to be the English
version, that's the English title of it, yeah. Well, you meet the same people there if you knock on the door here. So, I mean,
I always thought that was a little bit phony to go down to the south of France to meet people who are a couple blocks away. It's fun, but a little phony. Who's paying for this? I always wonder when that's happening. Okay, so you knock on the doors and you start selling the mm-hmm. Laura Trenter stories.
Yeah.
Are you deciding that you want to work with children as your way into features? Isn't there a rule, don't work with children or animals?
No, I think it's easiest to work with children and animals. I don't follow that, actually. Okay. It's easier for them than actors sometimes. And I'm a farmer as well, so.
No challenge.
Yeah, no, there is a challenge. But you do a very specific casting. And when you do a specific casting for kids, the kids will work through the whole production. That's what I think. Yeah, at this time we approached SVT, or Marianne approached SVT in the very beginning, and then I did the budgeting and production planning and everything, and we pitched it again. And at that time, it went really pretty quickly.
And you did
with SVT.
You did three of her books.
Yeah, three of her books.
And do you pitch all of them as a package?
Yeah.
Or you went, okay.
We did, and we decided then to have three different directors, and we actually got nominated with this one. I don't know if you know, but for international Emmy. So we went there
for De Bruyne or Papa Police.
De Bruyne, or the whole production, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, you apply to the international Emmy with the whole series. Yeah.
Congratulations.
It was nominated. We didn't win that time. We got nominated.
It's nice to be noticed,
yeah.
I would think.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm sure it's a very noisy category to even get nominated in.
It was at that point, the children categories was together with all the big categories. So for us, Marianne and me, first drama project, and then going through the red carpet in New York, it was like, is this true? It was crazy. It was really good fun. Good start of the drama.
And it's been straight upward for you since then.
Yes, well, it's been going well. I've been lucky to work with great projects. So.
Tremendous projects, and they're interesting. So after the Laura Trenter trilogy, was it Laserman that was your next big production?
Yeah.
How did that come about? I mean, that was a newsworthy event in Sweden, and it's clear, okay, this is a story.
Mm.
But I'm sure everyone else was looking at doing that story at the same time. How does it end up that you guys get control?
Marianne was working together with a lady called Helene Lindholm, who was her lektör, reading through all the books. So she found that book, Helene Lindholm. And I was actually working with something else at that time. And then Marianne called me up and said, hey, we got this, you know. So we started to work again, buying the option, developing it, going to SVT, approaching them. And they wanted it from the beginning. So it was pretty quick there to put it together. Yeah.
Is that always your formula, to work from a book? Do you ever buy a script that's written directly for the film, for a film?
I have worked with original scripts, but at Jarovski and Yellowbird, they as a company, they do adaptations mainly. But Jarovski now, this is 2000, beginning of 2000. Jarovski now is totally different owners and different boss and everything. So now it could be original script, it could be buy a book, or it could be whatever, you know, whatever's interesting to do a series or a.
No, I'm just thinking the dynamic of, okay, you know, looking at all the books that are out there and always reading versus, oh, we have an idea, commission this kind of a topic, someone get someone to write this for me.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, that's what happened with the restaurant. If I understood your question right now, that was that's original script, and I worked with the original script three of my projects has been one. The other one was at SVT when I was taking some time off Jarovski, because there was not so much to do at that time. So I got headhunted, you could say, or whatever, by Daniel Alfredsson, who was a drama boss at SVT at that point. So he took me in at SVT Drama for 2 years. And at SVT, I worked with the original script.
What titles?
That was Min för detta familj.
My form. I don't know that one. But no.
It's in the eye. It was sent on SVT. It was a 3x60 episodes.
3x60. Yeah. And then you get back to Jaworski and you guys get your hands on the Stieg Larsson rights.
Yeah.
Now, that must have been exciting.
Yes. But before that, I did the... After Laserman, I actually, if you want to hear some personal stuff.
Sure.
I was really tired after that big production. And also being so foolish of not... We were talking about having big production departments. We were shooting a period, and then I saved a week for the summer because we needed some summer episodes. So what I did at that time, I said, oh, it's only a month shooting. You know, I could do this with skipping out of production manager. So that was a little bit too much work at the time. And my kids, that was 7 or 8 or 9 years old, I think, called me in the middle of the night saying, hey, mom, you haven't been home now for 5 days. Where are you? So I actually took a year off after Lars and Mannen.
That's a wake-up call, if ever there was one, in the middle of the night. When, yeah. Mama, where are you?
Yeah, it was crazy. So I took a year off. It didn't turn out to be a year off because Daniel Alfredsson called me up and said, hey, I have this great script and I think you will be the best line producer of this one. And we were shooting that one in the north of Sweden. So I actually had my office on a snowmobile and it was a feature film called Varg. It was a fantastic and fun production, and we worked with Sami people and the locals up there in Valsjöbyn. It was excellent.
Do you ever bring your kids on set with you?
Sometimes.
To solve that a little bit?
Yeah, but yes. You know,
You're working.
Yeah, I'm working, so it's hard. But they came up when I was working on this film, which was in the north of Sweden, lovely, beautiful countryside. I took them up there, yeah, for a week, okay, weekends.
So you're pulled out of your early retirement.
Yeah, and went on that movie. And then after that, Marianne called again because she wanted to do another kids program, which was Habib.
Habib, oh.
Yeah, so we did that.
So you're becoming a go-to kids producer at this point.
Yeah, went back. That's the fun of this job, you know, to do either. One project is really dead serious with Lars and Mannen, and one is for the kids. And then you go up to the north to do feature films with the locals up there. And then after that, you know, big, heavy book title, Millennium Series. So it's so fun to do different. That's what's make me going, you know, that I have different projects all the time.
From tzatziki to men, some hot or cleaner. Yeah. It's a big jump.
Yeah, it is, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. And actually, you know, at that time, I was working with producer Søren Starmus, and he said, Suzanne, you need to go on this job and please work with me together. I was at Yellowbird because we have merged. Jaroski has merged with Yellowbird. So
Yellowbird, who did the Akipirat?
Yeah, for sure, yeah. And you must read these books. And I thought these books were so boring. I started off reading the first one until I came to the middle. When I came to the middle, I couldn't stop reading. So it was just the first half was so boring. I was like, oh, this old man, blah, 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 here and there. And then it got really, after the half of the book, I was hooked.
There's a story here.
Yeah.
can I ask, this is interesting to me because we've had some other people up here who've been through the same phenomenon. Mm. You guys put all your effort into producing these three fantastic films that were really well received here, critically and financially, I assume. And then you turn them over to someone else to remake. Mm. What is that like? I mean, and are you guys involved in it? Are you involved in that deal? Is it?
Yellowbird is, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yellowbird is. So they will earn some more money for making a remake. For me, as just produced the whole thing, it's kind of, yeah, well, we'll see what they do. And I'm not objective now, of course, but I've seen the first one. I liked the trailer, but I didn't like the film.
Fair enough.
I think it's, of course, very well produced and all this, but I kind of like the original.
You see decisions that are made that you don't agree with? Or just...
Yeah. It's just, you know, I still remember a few decisions that are a little bit funny. That is... If you look at the train station from where they live in kind of Henrik Wanger, where he lives, it looks like a Harry Potter station. It doesn't look like a Swedish old station. And if you get into the small cafes, and this is now details, you go into location. It looks more like a straight German coffee shop or something, not a Swedish.
Generic other,
yeah,
not American.
Everything, yeah, sort of. But then again, I think they did, I lost the name now, the terrible lawyer, Bjurman. Our Bjurman is really good. It's Peter Andersson, but the costume of the American Bjurman, that was how I pictured him when I read the book. So I mean, of course, it's well produced, but I know that one costed like 10 times more than all of our three ones.
And do you see that 10 times more on the screen? Do you
no,
think? No, okay.
For sure not. And that's why, that's what HBO and Netflix and also American production companies should really look at Sweden and sort of, you know, maybe grab people from here and come and produce it your way.
They're starting to. We're seeing it
yeah.
happening. You know, I think
I'm just waiting for the call.
I think there's some kind of a happy balance in there that sometimes you feel that a few dollars more might have made the difference.
Yeah.
And not just Swedish productions, but more local productions.
Yeah.
And then you see that some of these American productions, there's definitely overkill here involved.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a sweet spot in there where the art is.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I guess a lot of money goes to much higher wages to the American actors as well. But seeing how the Dragon Tattoo was produced in Sweden, they were here shooting. I mean, we have like 5 prop people, they have 15 prop people. And because they sort of have so much bigger team, it has to be bigger all the way around. It
right.
goes like circles. The location manager has to have more assistants and blah, blah, blah. So it grows and grows and grows. But I think we are really good in Scandinavia of producing good drama series. I mean, we have showed that for crime series for ages now.
No question.
And I just wish they would open their eyes to our costume drama too, because we can. I mean, I'm really proud of Vårtid är nu. I think it's really good, and it looks like it cost a lot of money, but the episode price for our series is like a normal crime drama in Stockholm, in Sweden.
Well, that's amazing that you pulled it off with that kind of a budget.
And I know it's said in the press that this is the biggest stora satsningen from SVT right now, and it is in the way that they did commission 2 seasons at the same time, but the episode price is still not so high.
Commission 2, and I've now commissioned a third as well.
Yeah, so that's where
success.
We're filming right now. I'm on my way down.
and it's a co-production between SVT and Viaplay,
yeah.
among others. That's an interesting phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's something that probably wouldn't have happened a few years ago.
No.
And what does that mean for you as a producer? Is that necessary for you to make this project that you needed both of those houses to come together to finance it?
Yeah. It was for sure, and I'm so happy. It's Lasse Vannebo and Irene Lindblad who pulled this together. And they were the first one who made this come true in Sweden. Now I think it's a few more co-production producers have come together, but that was the first time.
And that can't be an easy dance. Are you pitching to both Viaplay and SVT? Are you the ones who bring them together, or are they cooperating and looking for something?
It was Irene and Lasse who put the dance together, who said, and SVT said, well, no, we cannot do this. Well, then you have to pay more, and they can't pay more. So they were really good there, Lasse and Irene. I was so happy because I got the more money so we could, you know, pull off and get the green light.
It shows in the success that this is a way forward. It's also if we take a broader perspective, if the local regional players are going to compete with the Amazons and the Netflix, it's going to require this kind of cooperation on the market level to sort of stand up and to do quality material that's going to compete.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about Vårtid är nu.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a scripted drama.
Yeah.
Who wrote it?
We have a group, we have a team. I need to tell you how we started, because it's a man called Johan Rosenlind. He is he's in his late 50s, I think. Over 55 anyway. And he hasn't written any books or any scripts before. And he just sent in this idea to SVT.
I love people who just do this, who just reach out.
Isn't it fantastic?
Yes.
And the timing that I did it was during the summer, and there was not much income at the time. And Malin Evander, who was working as a redaktör, script editor at Sweden, at Stockholm, at SVT at the time, she picked it up and, oh, this is interesting, and, you know, we need to develop this. And she went to her boss, which was Christian Wikander at that time, And they, yeah, this is interesting. So they call him in and they start to work with him, but he is not an experienced writer. So they put him together with another writer at SVT and they did this synopsis, longer synopsis. And then they approached Ulf Kvensler, who is the head writer of this project, and Ulf Kvensler and Jarowski and me. And we all really liked it. So we had the head writer and Ulf and I started to pitch it as well. He started working with development and also we put together a writer's room because writing so many scripts, you need like a writer's room with at least three writers, script writers, like one head writer and two episode writers. So we started to work with it and develop it. And I was also in the script room during a long period. And at the same time, I was scheduling up when we could make it, how we could produce it. Also connecting other people, like a production designer. Also worked together to put it, a mood trailer, a mood film.
Yeah. Is casting starting at this point already, or...?
No, not so much. A little bit, but not so much. More really having everything in print of what we wanted to do, and then also showing with visualizing, you know, with this mood films, so to say. We did two. One of that we call the restaurant, and then one that was more like with the family and. And then we started to pitch to SVT. I mean, they came to us, but then they need us to pitch it to them in a way. And you go up to the highest boss, programledningen, and pitch to them. And then they said yes. And we got a green light from them. And at the same time, Irene and Lars Vannebo was working to get the, we were all working to get the finances. Mustn't forget that it's also Film I Väst that are co-producer of this. They put in a lot of money too. And that's why I'm traveling down to Gothenburg
to do. Okay.
Yeah, because if you get money from them, of course you need to spend money down there.
Well, only fair.
Yeah,
it's great also that all this kind of support for the arts exists in Sweden. You don't have this in the States to the same degree that you have here. So it's really nice. There's Film I Stockholm also.
Yep.
Who all contributing to these things?
Mälardalen Film I Stockholm, yeah.
In the States, I guess you have basically cities are competing with tax breaks for productions each other, and it's a race to the bottom. So cities get nothing out of it at the end of the day. Mm. It's not the right way to go.
No. At this time, I mean, we spend like five times what they have put in, nearly. That's a negotiation, of course. It could be three times, four times, or five times. But so they do gain by doing it this way because we are spending.
So you have the money. You've scripts coming together, you're putting together your mood films, you're out pitching it, your financing comes together. Mm-hmm. Now the work starts. Now you have to put together a cast and a crew, your locations, get all your sets right, and it's a period piece, so that must be a lot of detail work going on.
Yeah.
What's the challenge? I mean, you guys are going to try to cover two decades now in 3 years. Mm-hmm. That must be a real challenge for your cast, for example. You have a lot of young actors and actresses who are going to have to age dramatically. Mm-hmm. It's going to be fun to see how Charlie Gustafsson looks 20 years older, for example. How are you handling those kind of things?
Well, when we did the casting, immediately when we sort of moved forward in the development, we did start to cast. First, we got a development money for the script, and sort of in the end of that, we did start to do casting. And yes, when we did casting, we had contact with the head of makeup, just to talk to her and say, hey, do you have an idea how we can do this guy older, or would it be hard?
Because you have the whole story arc in your mind at this point. Okay.
Yeah. We had it from the beginning, or Johan actually had it from the beginning. The guy who was
the source of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so you're working with the makeup people from day one, so you have your sort of future proofing when you're doing your casting.
Yeah. We call them, we had this big good connection with the head of makeup all the time just to make sure that we could. And also we decided that that we need to find what age they could be to be, you know, to play younger and older. So I mean, Hedda, she's not 18 as she was, or 20 as she was in the beginning. She's a bit older. She's 30. So that's the decision we made also, that they can sort of take the one that are around 30 so they can play younger older. Yeah, yeah.
It seems to have worked out really well so far.
Yeah, so far. We'll see what you think about the second period, second season.
I'm looking forward to seeing it. I mean, it's a class journey. It's an historical piece. Mm-hmm. I like, it starts with that kiss, you know, were you part of the decision on that idea? Because that's such an iconic image in almost every nation. There's a kiss in Times Square. There's a kiss in Paris.
There's one name for that, and that's Malin Nevander.
Malin Nevander. Okay.
Malin Nevander. She was She was the one who said it has to be a kiss, and she fighted for that one. Malin Nevander was the one at the time actually found the project when it came to SVT. Then she followed the whole project, so she has been a writer as well. And now she's back to SVT, but she is still very much involved with the third season. She's the head writer of the two last episodes, season three.
So you're heading down to Gothenburg right now, working on season three. How far along are you?
We are in the third week of shooting.
So what does that mean? Two episodes, an episode and a half?
No, we block them. So the first block, which is now called Block 7, is episode 21 to 24. Okay. So it could be any scenes from 24 or 21. So that's how you try to do it in a budget-wise way to do all the restaurant scenes,
right?
Whichever episode there are in a row.
That's the planning, the producing.
Yeah.
Interesting. So I guess Vartida Nu is taking all of your attention.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have something burning or on the bubbler for your next project? Anything you can talk about?
Nothing that I can talk about.
What is this? No one wants to talk about the future.
I don't want to talk about it because maybe some other ones will steal it, you know? So...
Is it a ruthless business? Or is it collegial?
It's hard for me to say because I do my projects at Jarovski, then I go home to my farm. I don't sort of, you know...
Worry about the politics
of it. No. I just do my projects and then I go home and I don't sort of frottera with other people. But, I mean, over the years, of course, you have colleagues, even producer colleagues that you talk with and so on. But it's kind of... I don't know. You just want to keep it to yourself and keep it to the group that you want to work with.
Fair enough.
Talk with the directors or with the script writers or whatever.
Yeah, talking about it with other people doesn't matter. It doesn't make it happen. So I understand. Fair enough. I respect that. I just think it's interesting. I've a lot of performers as well.
Yeah.
Oh, I have something I want. I have a dream project, but I won't say it.
No.
Well, how is it going to happen then if you won't say it?
It will happen.
Hopefully, yes.
Until you're sort of ready. You have all the options ready, you know, all the opponent.
Just as we wind up here, you said your original ambition was to be a DOP.
Yeah.
Do you spend any time with the camera in your hands these days?
No.
No?
Only the mobile phone.
Sure, you can shoot your films on that if you plan it correctly.
Yeah. No.
Is there, I ask everyone this, the difference between working on a feature film versus a series?
Mm?
Do you have a preference? Do you?
It's... only for me that I work with a smaller production team when it's only a film. That point is usually just me and the production manager. If I'm not doing other stuff at the same time, maybe then I would have a bigger team. But if I'm only working with one feature film and it's only it will be just me and the production manager usually. If I work with Vartida Nu, I work with line producer, production managers, two production managers. I have a post-production manager. So the bigger production team, yeah.
Do you have less sense of control as a result of that? No?
I'm everywhere.
Okay. She's nodding no for everyone listening at home.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
That was my problem before, that I wanted to have so much control so I didn't let go. But now I learned to you know, no, you have to let go because otherwise but a sort of hoovering, like I call it, like a, I'm hoovering like a helicopter. And then I dive down if there's a problem there, dive down there, and then I'm just trying to hoover around and be everywhere. Talk to the runner, talk to the chauffeur, talk to everyone, because that's how you keep the project sort of smooth and not going crazy.
Keep the real pulse of what's going on.
Keep the real pulse, everyone on the toes, also being happy, being seen, being yeah, doing their best. Mm. I mean, if you see people that do their best, if you hunt them down and just have a blame game, no one will do their best. Everybody would just be scared. And it's a bit too much of that in this business.
Mm, well, there's a lot of money at stake and the clock is always ticking. So I guess there's stress also, but that's about being the right manager.
Yeah, I should, you know, that you should never let stress. Of course, I'm being stressed too, but I've been to this, if you want something, I've been to these different productions where you have the DOP or the director or whoever being really punished to people that are sort of in lower levels. And they just get scared and they don't want know what to do when they don't do a great job.
Puts a chill on a whole ensemble and a whole production, that kind of behavior.
Management by fear is not good.
Not anywhere. No. Not anywhere. You talk about both filmmaking and TV, you describe a very collaborative effort.
Mm.
The final output, when you, like Vortida Nu, from the first script ideas and the early writing concepts that you worked with, how close does the final project look to what you had in your mind when you started reading those first pages?
Mm. It looks better than my vision, actually. I mean, we had such fantastic team. The production designer, Michael Higgins, is extremely good. The DOPs that we work with, Andreas Westberg and Ola Magnestam, are super. I mean, this is what you say, oh, we have such a great team, but we do. We have such an excellent team. So I think, you know, it looks even better than I could ever dream of.
That's the management by letting go and letting people be experts in their field.
Yeah.
I have a vision, but I'm going to trust these professionals to put their spice on it and come out with something a little different, but a little better, hopefully, at the end of the day.
And also, I mean, the wardrobe and the makeup, Marie Flücht on wardrobe, and then directors, of course. I mean, Harald Hamrell is the conceptuerande, but then we had three ladies, Molly Hartlob, who I never worked with, but I wanted to work with since Hinse Hexan. She's super excellent and very sort of noga. How would you say that in English? At everything. And she's very sort of, she has, super control and excellent.
Detail focus.
Yes, very detail focus.
And is it the same cast and crew going through all three?
Yes, everybody wants to come back.
Nice.
Super. We have, so of course, there are people that are getting pregnant and stuff. Such a long project. But yeah, mainly, I mean, I would say 95%.
Nice, because I can imagine that's also a challenge. You don't know if there's a season three. Mm-hmm. Everyone involved in the production is looking for other opportunities because they don't know. And, oh, by the way, we got it. Oh, sorry, I signed for something else.
Yeah. The directors for the second season is Anna Zachrisson and Andrea Östlund. And they have done a tremendous job as well. Super job. It's, I think you really enjoy it.
All right, something to look forward to for everyone.
I have
out
a
there.
Smile on my face.
she
it's
does.
Not, it's not a lot of people that has seen it yet, but we have started to show it now to the actors, and also, of course, to the producers, and everybody said, wow, could it be even better? You know, so, yeah.
It seems right in time. I mean, it does feel like it's time to move to costume pieces when I think of the success of something like The Crown right now, for example, as a reference. So hopefully we'll see more of this kind of production coming out of Sweden. As much as I love the decoré noir, we could do something else.
Yeah.
a little change of pace. All right, Suzanne, we know you have to get busy. You have to get down to Gothenburg and finish season three of Vortida Nu. And she'll not tell us about her secret project, but we'll keep our eyes open for what comes next after Vortida Nu. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you so much, Brian. Thank you. Super.
Okay, so we all know what a Jillaroo is now. I'm always learning something. That was a lot of fun. I really had no idea what to expect when we invited Suzanne to come on the show, and I came away thoroughly impressed with her as a person and as a professional. Once again, Vår Tidar Nu won 2 Swedish Emmys since we recorded this interview, one for Best Drama and a second for Best Female Actress in a Television Production that went to Hedda Stjernstedt for her portrayal of Nina. Season 1 of Vår Tidar Nu is available exclusively on Viaplay, and Season 2 will premiere shortly on Sveriges Television. We'll be back next week when our guest will be Jens Hultén. Thanks for finding us. As always, you can reach out to us on Twitter at StreamCloseUp and follow us there to keep up with what's going on. Jose Fernandez Alameda is our sonic architect, and I'd like to give special thanks to Sophie Forsell and Cecilia Hugvik for helping line up our guests. I'm your host, Brian Laffin. Thanks for joining us on another edition of Stream Close Up. As always, we'd like to thank the good people at I Like Radio for giving us a home. See you next week. Take us out, Jose.